fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Stretch it out. Warm up for your day with some exercises for your brain. Hey, don't want to pull a cerebellum. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, back in. It is Brady and Walker. Happy Monday. We get another week started. I'm Andrew Walker. No Greg Brady again. He takes a lot of vacation because he gets a lot of vacation. And very happy to have Eric Smith in studio all week. Long time. You've been here a long time. So I'm
too long.
I'm new, relatively speaking.
Max was a child, actually, when I started.
But 15 years, you were saying, you've been with SportsNet or The Fan?
16 now. I honestly have lost track. It's been a long time.
And all here at The Fan?
Yes. Yeah. Started as an intern out of college and then made my way up, I suppose. If making your way up is, you know, getting 2 hours sleep and coming in here. But I'm pleased to be here with you this morning.
You got a mention, I think Strombo mentioned you the other day on the Bob McCown special. You see that?
I did see it, actually. Yeah. I did. I think I was waiting until the credits just to see if my name was mentioned, or it might have been my mother that called me.
You were on the Strombo was going through all the guys who got their start on the Fan and with Primetime, and you were one of them.
He mentioned right towards the end as well that he and I had a show together, and I've told the story a couple of times before, but I was originally producing for Gord Stellick when I first started. That was my first real full time gig, was doing the Big Show back when Gordy was on 1-4. And I was just chomping at the bit, like every, you know, kid out of college and broadcasting and journalism and radio and whatever wants to be on the air. And George and I got a chance to do a show. It was Saturday and Sunday from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. We did two shows. And when we showed up for the third show the next weekend, George told me that he was leaving to take a new gig, and he was moving on to a different radio station, then went to Much Music and CBC, and the rest is history. But we literally did two shows together, because after that, we didn't even go on the air the following weekend. It was that weekend that he said, "Hey, man, these two shows have been great. I'm leaving."
I'm gone.
And that was my big sniff. And one of the two shows that we did on the air, George talks about all the time. I don't even know if he still has these or not, but he had two pet pythons, and we had the snakes on the air with us. And I'm not a big snake
George
guy.
George had two pet pythons?
Yeah.
So that's not a big shock.
He brought them in studio, and as we're doing the show, they're crawling on our arms, and this one starts crawling down the sleeve of my shirt as I'm on the air, and I'm about to lose my you-know-what, and just trying to hold it together doing the show with the snake, and, you know, there's lots of George stories, but it was funny that was my one, I thought, chance to really jump off the cliff and get on the air, and then it lasted two shows.
So 5:32, happy to have you in all weekend, and there's plenty of things to explore coming up today. What's going on? Cody Franson goes to arbitration today, so it begs the question, what is Cody Franson to the Leafs? Does he sign a last-minute deal during our show today, after our show today? We'll certainly look at it. The Blue Jays with a big series win. Rory McIlroy wins the British Open, leads it wire to wire. What caught your attention on a Sunday? What was your TV viewing day like?
You know, I kept my eye on the British Open in the morning. It lacked a little bit of the drama. I don't know about you, Andrew, but the fact that we're
3-for-3.
Yeah, right? the fact that you got Rory taking the lead on Thursday and never looking back, I'm impressed by that, but it just sort of took away some of the luster and some of the drama that you might, you know, like to see in a major, especially on a Sunday, and you know, having a tight race, at least having a couple of guys in it. But I was really keeping an eye on the Jays. I have been all season, because I think we all sort of got sucked in early, and then watching the decline now and seeing, can they stay in this, and knowing that they're still within kind of breathing distance. The game is sort of always on in the background. Wherever I am, it's either on at home, it's on the radio, you're checking the score at a bar, whatever it is, just kind of, you know. And that's the one thing, is that while they stay close, while they're still sort of, you know, we can say they're in it when it's only a handful of games, they're obviously not out of it. I think that just kind of just keeps building the murmur, I guess, that might be in the city for the team. It's not like what it was maybe 6 weeks ago, but I think it's still kind of like you want to watch and see if they can actually do something finally. And I can say that from all the time with the Raptors. I would said it for years. The biggest thing holding that team back was that they were irrelevant for so long because they were playing so poorly. And I think the Jays has been 20 years of irrelevancy, and now people finally see something and they want to grasp onto it.
I think every Jays fan right now worth their salt has a good idea of they probably have like the X-rays of Adam Lind and Edwin Encarnacion and Brett Laurie kind of up in their den in their man cave. They can probably tell you when and how and why and if these guys are coming back. And that seems to be the date, right? And who knows? There was reports yesterday that Edwin's getting closer and Adam Lind is getting closer, and maybe we'll see a rehab game or two in a week. But I mean, if you say 2 weeks from now that those three guys are back in the lineup, that's the date. That's the drop dead date. And up until then, the goal is, and I don't know, I got into it with Brady last week because he said, no, you need to pick up ground and you need to pick up ground right now. Well, I don't really agree with that. I think that this lineup is still at times ragtag.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about staying alive. It's keeping your head above water. And when you get healthy, yeah, this is going to have to be the story. You don't need a Colorado Rockies-esque run, but you're going to have to get everybody back, not lose anybody else, and then explode over the last month and a half in the season. That's how you get it.
The problem for them, I guess, though, is that, and I'm admittedly sort of sitting on the fence between you and Brady right now then, because I can kind of see both sides in terms of staying the course, waiting for the guns to return. But at the same time, are the guns good enough that you have to ultimately make that next push? Because they've had their big run already. Is there another? It might not be, you know, it might not be 21-9, but do they have another gigantic push in them to kind of elevate them and push them over the top of a team like Baltimore? But you look at those standings, to your point, and say, hey, three games back. I think the tough thing for me, I was listening the other day to Tim and Sid, and Tim was talking to Shai Davidi.
Never heard of him.
They got a show in the afternoon sometimes. So Shai Davidi was saying, and I don't have the article in front of me right now. You brought it up, and within the last 4 years, the Jays are plus or minus two or three games from 500. And it's basically since Batista made his first All-Star game. And I'm not laying it on his shoulders by any means. But you are what you are. You've been this sort of average 500-ish team for 4 years. And that's exactly what they are right now, hovering around that 500 mark, going into the All-Star break, a couple of games up. At what point is it time to blank or get off the pot? Either you go for a run and you start gearing up and bringing the guns and surround this team, Batista specifically, with that much more talent, or say, you know what, we haven't done it with this core, we haven't done it with the guns we think we have, and it's time to start moving on.
Too strong of opinion before 5:40. We'll explore that later. Andrew Walker, Eric Smith, 5:37, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Everything you're talking about, they're talking about. Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
5:44, it is Brady and Walker on your Monday. Andrew Walker, Eric Smith in this week. Greg Brady I assume, the latest Lilith Fair, wherever it's being held this week. It's really a whole week if you really want to experience it correctly. Now and then, our look at today in history with Ryan Faber, our producer, is back as well. He'll have that coming up in about 5 minutes. And should note, at 6:31 today, follow or unfollow returns to Brady and Walker. Haven't done it for a long, long time, but we will expose Eric Smith to it, one of our favorite segments here on the show. Interesting weekend for the Blue Jays. They had to have this series, had to have it, no doubt about it. Texas, you look at the standings, we haven't seen Texas for a long time, and you see them in last place in the American League, and you still kind of give them the benefit of the doubt that they're better than that. They still have Beltre and Rios and Andrews and Yu Darvish. And certainly on Friday night, they didn't look like the last place Texas mm-hmm. Rangers. But I think over the last 2 days, we kind of saw what's happened to this club.
You know what I thought as well, looking at that team yesterday, Andrew? It was when it was 5-2 Toronto, and then the Rangers come back and tie it. Yeah, got the balk by Burley, and then the two-run single that ties the game up. To me, that was a test almost for both teams as well. To your point, the Rangers proved what the Rangers are and what they've been all
right.
year.
That's a game that losers lose.
Yeah,
right?
You instantly give it back. I mean, as much as the Jays gave it up by taking the 5-2 lead and then giving it right back, there was Cabrera with the solo shot in the seventh, and the Rangers ends up losing the game. And to me, I'm not going to sit here and say that, you know, on July 20th, that was the game that turned it around for the Jays, but that was a game that a week ago, let alone 2 weeks ago, they weren't winning those games. When I mean, when I was doing those those games for a week. They went 1-6 while I was sitting on the desk on the TV side. And they were terrible. I mean, they were terrible. Giving up leads, can't come back in games. So that, to me, was a good sign for them as well. As much as the victory on Saturday was nice, to have a comeback win like that, that was good on the Jays, and it proved what you're just talking about with the Rangers.
You know who they reminded me of a little bit? And it was the Jays of the last few weeks. Because you look at the top of that lineup, Sin Soo Choo, Elvis Andrews, Alex Rios, Adrian Beltre. You think, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good top four. And then the rest of that lineup, with the exception of maybe Leonis Martin, you're like, who are these guys? J.P. Arencibi up from AAA. You have Giovanni Soto, who just is playing his first ball of the season and doesn't look like himself. The rest of that lineup is a mix, just a mismatch. And it was the same as what we've seen from the Blue Jays over the last month or so, from 5 through 9, just an assortment of minor leaguer after minor leaguer. And then Alex Rios gets hurt in the second game of this series. And that's just how it's gone for Texas. There is no Jurickson Profar, and there's no Prince Fielder. And, of course, Ian Kinsler was dealt away for Prince Fielder. So I felt like after they got through Adrian Beltre the last two nights, you didn't have to worry about too much.
See, now let me go back to the conversation we had before the break, but maybe gearing up. Would you take a guy like Beltre? And I'm not walking down some fantasy trade path here. I hate doing that, coming up with creative scenarios. But just in theory, a guy like Beltre, if you're Toronto, would you be kicking the tires to see if Texas is interested in giving him up in a deal?
I mean, yes. Short answer, yes, because I think he's undeniable, right? Adrian Beltre improves your lineup. You make Brett Laurie your full-time second baseman, at least for the next year or two. My thing is, it's just really, really easy for a fan to be mad at Anthopoulos right now. No one else around the majors is making a bunch of trades. We saw the big Oakland trade, but with the Cubs and Jeff Samardzija, but the Blue Jays weren't going to be in on that. They just have the names to get it done. It's really easy to say, go get this guy because Brett Laurie's hurt. I mean, Brett Laurie, when he comes back, and he'll be back in a few weeks, is better than any third baseman on the market right now. So are you going to get...
Defensively.
And with the bat, he's probably right in the middle. So are you going to go trade for someone to fill a hole for 3 weeks? I can understand why there's hesitation to do that if you're Anthopoulos.
I can see why there's hesitation, but at the same time, this lineup to me needs something. And the something might be the return of Brett Laurie, the return of Adam Lind, the return of Edwin Encarnacion. But we're assuming, I guess, they're all coming back, playing their best at the top of their games, that whatever rehab assignment they have, whether it be for a game or 7 games, that's going to be enough to have them ready once they hit the majors and they're back with the big club. There's going to be a feeling out process and a little bit of, a time, I think, for them to ease themselves back in. And this is why I think it's such a weird time as well, where I can appreciate where Alex Anthopoulos is coming from in that timing-wise. I mean, I know baseball has, 7 different trade deadlines, but the one that really matters is about 2 weeks
away. July 31st, yeah.
Well, when are your guys coming back? In about 2 weeks. You wish that they were coming back now so you could actually make an assessment on this team and know if you actually have to have a deal done or not.
I tell you what, I don't know how it finishes up. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know how this story ends. But if he doesn't make a move, and before the big boys get back, if this team sucks this week against Boston and New York, and then you're going to Boston next week, and they find themselves too far gone, then the criticism is really going to come, and Alex Anthopoulos will be put to the fire. 5:50, it's Today in History. Ryan Fabro's in. Let's do Now and Then.
Now and Then. A hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history. I'll be
back in time. It is a Monday, July 21st. We're a month into this summer. Summer started a month ago.
That's true.
Summer solstice of June 21st. So that's all I got. What happened today in history?
Well, wow, this is summer solstice.
Good to have
you back. I don't know what you're talking about.
How did you guys do in the last month with this segment? Not the same, was it?
Wasn't the same. We got plenty of tweets and texts about it.
Did you?
At least three.
Three. I'll take three.
Fabro's mom, Fabro's wife, and Fabro.
Yeah, nobody's off at this time, right? Anyway, we'll do important things that happen on this day in history, Eric Smith. That's what we do.
And non-important things as well.
Very unimportant. Such as, in 1983 on this date, the world's lowest temperature ever was recorded. Minus 89 Celsius in Antarctica. So there you go.
Just
you
learn something. Regular week on the prairies.
That's right.
Might need to plug in your car.
And you still aren't wearing a jacket, probably.
1994, True Lies, the number one movie 20 years ago. We're all old. I think it might have been Arnold's best movie.
I honestly don't know if I've seen it.
You must be very proud of yourself.
Seriously.
What?
Yeah.
Go watch it today while you're in a golf tournament.
Arnold's best movie in terms of like acting storyline. Because what about like Predator?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you're not looking for great acting in that movie.
I know, but.
Good movie. But no, True Lies is great. Tom Arnold's funny. Tia Carrera was kind of hot in a like weird way.
She had a moment.
Yeah, that was her moment.
Jamie Lee Curtis is weird because she's such a mom, but she has these moments where you're like, man.
I thought you were going to say she has these something else. Trading Places.
She does, yeah.
But wow. Everybody remembers the scene in Trading Places,
well,
right?
And everybody remembers the scene in True Lies. If you haven't seen it, she's not naked, but she strips down.
And it's
a whole stripper scene.
Yeah.
Now I got to go see True Lies.
The faces, you know. But it's a great scene. And Arnold's sitting in the chair, like smoking a cigarette and saying weird,
oh,
like
okay,
French.
I have seen that
they're
one.
They're married, so. But she doesn't know it's him, yeah, or something like that. Yeah.
It's one of the True Lies. Good move. And what else? 1996, Gretzky signs a 2-year deal with the Rangers. Should have been the Maple Leafs, but good job, Cliff Fletcher.
Should have been the Maple Leafs.
My theory is...
No, that was Steve Stavro not willing to pony up the money.
That's right.
My theory is Gretzky could still run a power play on the half wall. Agree? Disagree?
For the Leafs, yeah. I don't know. Like for one of those good Western Conference teams, I don't know. Yeah, probably. Why not? Power play, sure. And 19, talk about movies. 15 years ago, the number one movie in 1999, Eyes Wide Shut with Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman.
Stanley Kubrick.
His final movie, I think he passed away right before it came out, actually.
And they were married while they were filming that, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was weird, though. They had a... Have you seen that movie?
I liked it.
You liked it, really?
Yeah.
I did, too.
I thought it was a little disturbing.
But is that because we're, like, sex freaks, or do we appreciate good cinematography?
I don't know. Brady.
Definitely cinematography for me.
I want to go to a secret club with a mask.
You want somebody in a movie like that other than Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman, don't you? I mean, as good as it was in moments.
What do you want, like Peter North?
I want a little more filth. I want a little more dirt.
He wants Peter North and Gina Gershon in this movie.
Actually, you might be onto something there.
Yeah, it might be. That's an Eyes Wide Shut too. All right, let's move on to birthdays. Okay, John Lovitz.
I am not gay.
Thank you, John
Lovitz.
How old is John Lovitz today, Eric?
62.
That is incorrect.
Not bad.
I'll say older, 64.
Incorrect. It's 54. Or 57.
Wow.
He looks
best,
great.
Best character of John Lovitz for me was A League of Their Own when he was the scout.
Oh, yeah.
God, he was so funny.
Wedding Singer.
That's pretty good,
behind
too.
The curtains. He is fantastic. It is a really bad... bad actor day here in Josh Hartnett. You remember that guy? He was around. He was going to be the next. I don't know.
You know, he was going to be the next.
Somebody bad.
Oh God, who is Magic Mike? Who is the stripper guy?
Matthew McConaughey.
He was like the original Channing Tatum.
Yes,
and then started sucking.
He did. He's 36 today, and CeCe Sabathia is
107 pounds.
Out for the year.
No, he's thin now, but he's out for the year. He's 34. Oh. And the number one hit on this date from 1989, I believe it's pronounced Martika.
Yes. Toy Soldiers.
Toy Soldiers. I don't know. I'm pretty sure this is a bad song. But there you go. So we learned something here today.
I swear to God, I saw Eric Smith do this at karaoke a few weeks ago.
I thought this was from Brady's iPod.
It is. 5:55, Brady and Walker. It's Andrew Walker and Eric Smith in today. Back in. On the Blue Jays, did they stop that bleeding? Did they get that tourniquet on last night against the Texas Rangers? Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Milky leads T.O. past Texas.
Here's his 1-0 pitch. Line drive up the middle. Through the glove of Odor. Goes into center field. A base hit. Goes, scores. Here comes Reyes. The throw. He scores standing up. A two-run shot up the middle by Milky. And the Blue Jays lead it 9-5.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Well, they had to have it. You heard it all week on the radio. You heard it from Greg Zahn on Blue Jays Central. The Blue Jays had to win this series against the ragtag, injury-riddled Texas Rangers. And they do it. They take 2 of 3, including 9-6 yesterday. Good morning. Happy Monday. It is Brady and Walker. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith from Sportsnet joining me in the place of Greg Brady this week. Good morning. Good to have you in. You're here all week.
I am here all week. Happy to be here, actually. I'm feeling pretty good right now. I'm sure I'm going to hit that wall in about...
No question.
What, an hour and a half?
Yeah, about there.
Yeah?
About 7:30, 8 this morning, your head will be down on the desk here. It's not your... I don't want to say your father's Texas Rangers, but you look at the standings, and it still surprises you just what a nightmare season this has been for Texas. You thought Toronto was tough last year. You thought being a Blue Jays fan was tough last year. Being a Rangers fan this year, I would submit to the jury, it's been worse.
I would probably buy into that. When you're 20 games below 500 with the type of team that they have, at least on paper, or the team you thought you had on paper, and then when the injuries start piling up, the pitching doesn't turn out to be what you thought it was, at least outside of maybe you, Darvish. Yeah, they can't be fun right now, considering the success they've had, though. But that also, doesn't it buy you a little bit of, I don't know, a little bit of goodwill, a little bit of grace if you're the Texas Rangers? At least they've been there. I mean, this city's been the one that's been suffering for a long time. There are other markets that have had it worse than what Texas is dealing with right now.
And it's partly underperforming, right? There are guys that have just been lousy. Look at Colby Lewis. It's a pretty decent pitcher that's had just an awful year. Sin-Soo Choo is a pretty good player. First year of that massive deal, and he's been no good. And the other half of it is injuries. There's no Prince Fielder. There's no Jurickson Profar. We saw Alex Rios. Go out, Mitch Moreland go out for this squad. But yeah, they're the worst team in the American League. Their winning percentage is below 400. It's worse than Houston. They're 22 games back in the AL West. All this stuff added up to the Blue Jays having to have this series. We kind of said it leading in the Friday. You lose this. You lose this. Coming back from the All-Star break, where you're rested, you lose it to Texas, and it's kind of your new low point in terms of how this last month and a half has gone. But give them credit. They lost to Darvish on Friday, and nobody on the planet is beating them that night. But I thought they really rallied, Eric, over these last two games.
Well, and you've got an opportunity now to try and wipe out everything that happened before the All-Star break. Because obviously the 2-8 was abysmal for the Jays in those 10 games on the road before the break. But now you come back, you've got a whack of games at home. You've got a ton of games against teams below 500. This is the opportunity to make your ground now. You know, I know I've been listening to you guys. We've been talking about on the station probably from, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. This is the moment. These 2 weeks, 3 weeks, these chunk of games will be what determines where this team is going. And again, I kind of harken back to what I just said 10 minutes ago. It's coming almost at a bad time in some senses because you're trying to get out that crystal ball that you spoke of, Andrew, trying to figure out, do we need to make a move or do we stay the course with what we have? Because you're going to know what this team is, not only when some of those bodies start coming back, but when these next 15 games or so are up. That's probably going to determine where you are in the division, and that obviously dictates where you are in the rest of the league, because you're not getting the wild card this year. The wild card is going to be coming from the West. You've got to win the East, period, to make the playoffs.
The problem with, and it's really easy, because all the eyes are on Anthopoulos right now, and I think it's really easy to say, Eric, that Anthopoulos needs to go make a deal. I mean, we follow the league. I like to think I know a lot about baseball and this team and that team. I still don't know what that perfect deal is. And I don't think it involves giving up your top three prospects for another starting pitcher. I really don't believe that. So it's tough for me to sit here and wag my finger at Anthopoulos and say, make a deal.
Sure.
When I don't know what that deal is exactly.
Yeah, and I don't know if he does. Because I don't know if he knows truly what he needs right now. We all thought, what, a month ago, 2 months ago for sure, that deal was the Jays need pitching. I don't know that they do right now. They're not blowing the doors off, but they've been steady. They've been steady as a starting five overall.
It's been really steady. And
it's
here we are.
The offense that's dropped off.
Yeah, we're 90 some games in.
But which hole specifically are you going to plug in the offense? It's tough to figure out.
Well, to be honest, when you're fully healthy, when Adam Lind is back and Edwin Encarnacion is back and Brett Laurie is back, the biggest void offensively on this club is either second base full time, mm-hmm. even though I think we both agree Muna Norikawa's hockey's been pretty good. I don't know how long that lasts, but he's hitting .294. It's either at second base or it is depth on the bench, especially depth on the bench. Now, Alex Anthopoulos goes out and I think pulls together a pretty nice little waiver move with Nolan Reimold, and everyone rolls their eyes and scoffs at Anthopoulos because, oh, that's all you do? But at the end of the day, Reimold gets hurt, and boy, wouldn't it be nice to have that right-handed bat in the lineup right now? But I think, honestly, unless you can find a second baseman like a Martin Prado or something like that, and he goes to second and Brett Laurie gets back and goes to third, I don't know if there's a deal out there that's really worth doing.
See, the one thing that I would say as well, and I'm pretty much agreeing with you too as far as Anthopoulos goes, is that I you get this all the time in any sport. I hear it with the Raptor fans all the time. Well, how come they're not doing this? Why didn't they try that? Or how come Toronto wasn't in on that deal? How do we know that Anthopoulos isn't on the phone literally as we're speaking right now? It's 6 o'clock in the morning calling somebody trying to strike a deal. How do we know that he hasn't kicked the tires on every single player that's out there? And are the asking prices too high? Or the asking price simply isn't right, or it's not the right time yet? I mean, he wouldn't be doing his job if he wasn't talking to every GM in the league, in both leagues, daily, trying to see what's out there and fielding calls from other teams that are maybe trying to pick him off and catch him at a weak moment. That's part of doing the job. And the one thing I will respect about him, even though it kills us in the media, is that more often than not with Anthopoulos, and obviously the big trade with the Marlins was a prime example of it, you don't hear a lot of the rumblings with the Jays. You don't hear about these trades rumored around for days or weeks ahead of time. A lot of stuff with Anthopoulos seems to pop up out of nowhere.
Yeah, and it's not about being an apologist. It's about me sitting here and being a realist, right? You
Absolutely.
Wanted the Jays to be in on David Price. This is probably how it went. He calls Tampa, says, we'd like Price. This is all we have. And Tampa says, we're not dealing him. And that's kind of the end of that. It is 10 after 6 on your Monday. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith. Let's get you what you need to know on your Monday.
This is your Monday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
All right, this is what you need to know. Number 6. Yes, Greg Brady's on holiday, so Eric Smith is my co-host all week. You know him well. He's been around 15 years, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now, Raptors connoisseur and broadcaster. Filled in for Jamie Campbell, though, this summer a little bit on Blue Jays Central. That looked like a lot of fun. But in your time, and you've seen the Vince days, is there a season that you've been this excited to get going? Is there a better time in the history of the Raptors to be a Raptors fan?
I think following on the heels of the game 7 against Philadelphia and the shot that just missed and the just rimmed out and the kind of following on all that fervor there, the free agent signings that came that summer, that following season was pretty huge. But I would say right now, given the...
A close second?
Very close second, especially considering not only the excitement of this team, but how this team could stack up in the new-look East.
At 6:42, really want to grill Eric on where the Raptors are this season heading in. I've given you my opinion. Greg Brady's given you his. What about Eric's? We'll take a look at Cleveland. We'll take a look at Miami. And, of course, the Raptors. They may be the three most intriguing teams in the Eastern Conference. Number 5, it was a busy weekend around Toronto. The Honda Indy got rained out Saturday, so they had to do the double dip yesterday. Yeah, doubleheader. We don't even see baseball doubleheaders in this city. And yet, down there on Lakeshore, we saw IndyCar. Rough weekend for James Hinchcliffe. Finishes 8th and 18th yesterday in the two races. The winner, Sebastian Bourdais and Mike Conway. Number 4, quick look around the American League East. The Baltimore Orioles get dummied 10-2 by Oakland. So that means the Blue Jays are 3 games back in the division. They actually pick up a game on Baltimore over the weekend. And this is almost the great evening point, isn't it? We all know that the Jays went 2-8 on that trip, and it sucked. And they deserved to lose, and they lost, and it was a real tough blow to take in the playoff race. But it was tough pitchers and tough ballparks and tough teams. And you would have gone 5-5 and probably been happy.
Sure.
And all of a sudden, guess what? Baltimore's going to find themselves in the same boat.
You've seen their schedule, right?
Yeah. They got the Angels.
They got the Angels for three. They've got the Mariners for four. They go back home for three more against the Angels and three more against the Mariners.
It's not easy. And I've always thought, hey, if Baltimore's going to go on that road trip, the Blue Jays just sucked on. If they're going to go and win 10 of 12, hey, help yourself. The division's yours. I concede. Sure. Right? It's one of those things. But as it stands, I don't think Baltimore's the 1927 Yankees. As long as the Blue Jays
their next
keep their
13 games are against the Angels and Mariners.
Red Sox play Kansas City yesterday, 6-0. John Lester was terrific. Tampa not dead yet, 7.5 back. They edge Mini 5-3. And the Yankees still tied with the Blue Jays, a 3-2 win over Cincy. They sweep the Reds. Number three, Rory McIlroy leads wire to wire to capture the British Open at Royal Liverpool. So he's 25 years old, and he's three major titles. It's going to make Augusta early next year really fun because Rory's going to be one Masters Championship away from that career slam.
As long as he's still single, he has a shot.
That's true. Right? It's amazing how golfing wins go directly hand-in-hand with where your relationship is.
Too much on your mind otherwise.
Tiger Woods, by the way, a 6-over on the turn. He did make the cut, which is a pretty good story. Finishes 69th. Congrats to David Hearn, a late add, the kid from Brantford, Ontario. Not really a kid anymore, but he finishes 32nd. Number two, Cody Franson today, Eric, set to go to arbitration with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs have tabled a value of $2 million. Franson came in with 4.2. The two sides could meet final minute and come to a deal, and most likely will split the difference. James Reimer goes to arbitration next Monday, and the number one thing you need to know on your Monday, the Blue Jays had to have it, and they got it. 9-6 against the Texas Rangers. Nice game from Melky Cabrera. Three hits, drives in three, including that go-ahead home run in the seventh inning.
He's going to get paid.
Yeah. Yeah, he will.
Depends on where.
I'd give him a deal, and I'd let Colby Rasmus walk if we were making our decision today. Blue Jays Red Sox coverage begins at 7 right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You have a John Lackey against Drew Hutchison tonight.
Always the best sports talk on Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All I know is that I've won my third major championship, and I'm, you know, three legs, you know, out of the four towards a career grand slam at 25. So I'm feeling pretty good right now.
6:23, good morning. Brady and Walker on your Monday, the day after for Rory McIlroy. Boy, his head hurts today. No doubt about it. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith. And Rory, just like that, 25 years old. And he has three major championships. PGA, a British Open, and a U.S. Open. He dominated the U.S. Open at, I believe it was Congressional, a few years ago. And it was only a two-stroke victory, Eric, this time around in the British Open at Royal Liverpool. It felt like more because this was Rory's tournament and everybody else.
Yeah, it started on Thursday and he never looked back, so I totally agree. It was one of those wire-to-wire type jobs, and as much as it got close at one point briefly yesterday, he was absolutely dominant. It was fun to watch in terms of his dominance, but, you know, obviously I think it took away, as we talked about before, a little bit of the luster that there wasn't that great challenge towards, you know, the final few holes.
6:31 this morning, we're going to play a follow or unfollow, one of our favorite features. But first, we go across the pond to Connor McNamara from the BBC. He was on the course at Royal Liverpool following everybody, including Rory McIlroy. Some of his pictures on Twitter, just terrific. Good morning, Connor. How are you?
Hi. Good morning, guys. I'm really good. Thanks. Really good. It was seriously impressive yesterday. You know, I think we've been quite lucky through the years. We get a lot of open championships where it rained a lot. So to go around and be pretty much dry all week and enjoy a bit of sun on our backs was fantastic. And I have to say, you know, the quality of golf was incredible. We're all going to talk about Rory McIlroy, obviously, but Ricky Fowler right behind him, Sergio Garcia, Jim Furyk. I mean, these guys played some incredible golf this week.
I mean, you look at Sergio, he goes 6 under in the final round of a major, and it was just the wrong day to do it, wasn't it?
Well, it was, and, you know, I followed him earlier in the week as well, and some of the shots he was crafting, and, you know, it sometimes when it comes down to it in these championships, and obviously these are the most skilled players in the world, but luck does play a part, and, you know, you can just end up in a bunker, you can struggle to get out of it, and that can put pay to your Open Championship. I remember following him rounds at at one stage on Thursday. And, you know, there was one or two putts that he left out there. They could have made the difference in the end. But I think, you know, you can't take anything away from Rory McIlroy. Absolutely, he had the most favourable draw. He went out early Thursday, late Friday. They were the best conditions. But you know what? Half the field had those exact same conditions as him, and he was able to play just much, much better than them. I mean, there's a real buzz. I'm from Ireland, Republic of Ireland, up in the north of Ireland now. You know, they're beginning to feel that they've got this justifiable claim that, you know, Northern Ireland is the country of the best golfers. You know, five of the last 19 majors have been won by men from Northern Ireland. This is a tiny country. They have a population of less than 2 million people. I mean, a lot of cities, a much bigger population than this entire country. But for such a small country, they're managing to produce some phenomenal golfers. Obviously, Graham McDowell, Darren Clark, and now Rory McIlroy with his third major. I think we can definitely confirm he is now a superstar of the game.
Connor, it's interesting to see him get back to this level as well, where it wasn't that long ago where he had a little bit of a dip. We were talking maybe a year and a half ago about the next wave, and is Rory the guy to take the reins from Tiger? Then we saw a bit of a dip. For him to get back to this level, to win this major, to prove that whatever happened early in the career was certainly no fluke, he is this dominant golfer. He might be the next guy to take the reins for the tour. And the mental strength that I guess it takes to get back to this level is as impressive as what he actually did on the course.
I think it's a maturity. I think he's only 25 years of age, but he's been around the block a few times now. And, you know, he's got pressures to deal with that, you know, superstars of previous generations probably didn't, in terms of the media scrutiny, in terms of the trappings of fame, the wealth. Obviously, he had his celebrity relationship with Caroline Wozniacki, and it is a lot of pressure on a young man to try and hold it all together. And I think, you know, when we look back on the career of McIlroy, maybe in a decade's time, and we'll say, yeah, maybe he was distracted around that time. But I think where he's impressed us is that he's now managed to refocus, and he's got his life back in order. He's got his priorities straight. And you know, when he plays at his best, he is the most talented golfer. I mean, I was talking to a lot of people who watch a lot more golf than me and I have done over the years. And they say, you know, even Tiger at his best, they don't know if it's as good as Rory at his best. Now, the difference is, though, I mean, for Tiger Woods, and obviously he's got his own troubles and travails at the moment, Tiger Woods went for 10, 15 years consistently up there being a fantastic golfer. And that's what Rory McIlroy still has to achieve. He's won his three majors, and between them all, he's had a little fallow period. It'll be interesting to see the PGA Championship coming up very soon in Valhalla in Kentucky. And then, of course, by the time the Masters in Augusta rolls around next year, there'll be this huge hype because, of course, he's got three quarters now of his career major. He's won the other three. The one he hasn't got yet is the Masters. And can you imagine the sort of overdrive machine of hype that's going to go in? But you know what? I think Rory McIlroy is ready for it now. I think he'll be able to cope with it.
Connor McNamara joins us on Brady and Walker from the BBC, who's on the course covering Rory McIlroy's historic win at the British Open yesterday. Can you put into perspective just what this tournament means? I mean, over here in North America, I think we respect the U.S. Open, Augusta, and the British Open all pretty equally. There's a real nice part to winning each and every tournament. But over there, is the British Open just that much further ahead in terms of reverence?
No, absolutely. I mean, the thing is, you know, the other majors, they are on television over here, but a lot of them are on pay-per-view television, or maybe you've got to watch the highlight. The Open goes out on domestic TV for everyone to watch. So just the casual supporters, even people who don't know much about golf, and they watch this game. It's got that reverence. It's right up there in the public consciousness. Things like Wimbledon and the tennis. It is far more prestigious than, for example, the Tour de France and the cycling. This is just a week in the year where people sit down in front of their televisions. There is huge, sort of 12-hour-long broadcast. BBC One television in the UK. And it just takes over the consciousness. And you've got people discussing it with their parents, with their grandparents, little kids. Because of such a huge field, everyone can have different favorites that they want to look out to and watch. And then obviously you look down through the pass list of winners and you see how these are golf courses. The Lynx course is always by the sea. And they're not that sort of pretty manicured course, maybe the other major where every blade of grass is being cut to be exactly the same height or whatever. In a major, we've got gnarly grass. You know, you go into the rough here, you might need a digger to get yourself out. So in terms of a spectacle, it draws people in because it's like taking the most talented golf harsh conditions and seeing if their game is able to cope with it. The wind is a huge factor. You've got to way around these golf courses. Sometimes your best shot mightn't be the one to take. The shot that you're able to take personally, it might be a smarter move to try something different given the terrain, given the circumstances. So people, I think people really accept that as being a serious challenge of golf. And, you know, over the years, nobody has fluked an Open Championship. If you can play the best of the board, or the best there.
All right, Connor, thanks. We're losing you a little bit. Connor McNamara, terrific stuff from the BBC. And I find that fascinating about how, I mean, you want to watch the Masters over there, and it's on pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. But the Open is, it's the Open. I mean, we call it the British Open. Over there, it's just the Open. And Rory McIlroy, that's history made yesterday.
You know, and the fact that, as Connor was touching on as well, you're not going to fluke your way into something. You know, you're harking back to what happened in history for a guy like Rory as well. It was, what, the 2011 Masters, where he had the 54-hole lead, and he blew it.
Sure did. Yesterday, I remember it well. I had money on that. I was standing to make about a grand, trust me.
And yesterday, here he is. He's getting chased down from Sergio Garcia, and Fowler's not going away.
Puts his foot down.
Yeah, exactly. And he just puts his foot down, and he ends up winning things. So kudos to him. That's why I'm as impressed with the mental strength that it took maybe to win that thing and to hold on all the way from Thursday.
Andrew Walker, Eric Smith with you all week here on Brady and Walker to 6:31. Let's do follow or unfollow.
Brady and Walker's follow or unfollow.
All right, it's one of our favorite segments. It's been off for a while. It returns here with the addition of Eric Smith to the morning show. Basically, we look at each other's Twitter accounts. Yours, Eric, is what's your
Eric
Twitter
double
handle?
Underscore Smith.
Eric double underscore Smith. Now, we all have a lot of people we follow, and in your case, a lot of followers as well. But once in a while, if you follow 700, 800, 900 people, there'll be a very questionable follow that defines its way in. So Ryan Faber, our producer's in, to basically light you up.
All right. Yeah, well, I checked out your Twitter account yesterday. Following a lot of basketball players. You know,
a lot of NBA guys, yeah.
Part of your job. But you also follow John Mellencamp.
Oh.
And
I'm going to kill you on this one because it's for a very good reason, but I'll tell you anyway.
The singer-songwriter, of course, from Bloomington, Indiana, known for his hits such as Jack and Diane, Pink Houses.
Great tune.
R-O-C-K in the USA. So, Eric, and all your great Twitter accounts, why are you following John Mellencamp?
See, you're going to feel real bad about this one. He's one of my most recent follows as well. Okay. I actually joined this year the board for the Spina Bifida and Hydrocephalus Association of Ontario.
Here we go.
Well, hey, you brought it up. I actually joined the board, and I've been doing the 100 holes of golf for the last five years.
Yeah, for years.
I don't know if Andrew is as familiar with that one, but I've been doing this charity tournament for a long time, so the board actually asked me to join. So I'm like on the board now.
Okay, so
meetings.
Get to the John Mellencamp.
John Cougar Mellencamp has spina bifida, and he's the national spokesman in the U.S. for spina bifida hydrocephalus. So we were actually, as a board, trying to reach out to John to see if he would do some stuff for us here in Canada, in Ontario.
So I thought you were just a random huge fan of John Mellencamp.
See,
when you give good charitable reasons like that, it makes the segment far less funny.
Yeah,
find something else. There's got to be some bad model or some hip-hop artist I follow or something.
Damn, my follow-up was, did you prefer him as John Mellencamp or John Cougar Mellencamp?
The Cougar. We call him the Cougar.
The Cougar? Do you know why he was named Cougar?
I can only imagine, but no, I don't.
Well, trivia out there, folks. He didn't think his name Mellencamp could work because it was German sounding or something like that. So they gave him the name Johnny Cougar, and then he got mad and famous, and then he changed back and said, "Damn it, my name's Mellencamp." So there you go.
Here, I'll give you one. I follow Tay Diggs, and I have no idea why. The only reason why, it popped up on my timeline one day about a month or two ago. Tay Diggs is following you. I'm like, why is Tay Diggs following me? And it's a verified account. So
you follow Tay Diggs back.
So I thought, all right, I'll follow Tay Diggs.
Raptor.
I don't even know what he's done, but I follow Tay Diggs.
Does he have spina bifida? Something we'll get into later in the show.
Now that flopped. that flock.
6:34, Brady and Walker. When we come back, I'll grill Eric Smith. Where do the Raptors stack up? Where do the Cleveland Cavaliers stack up next season in the Eastern Conference?
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Keep it here for more Brady and Walker. Only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith. He's in for Greg Brady this week. It is Brady and Walker on your Monday, 6:42. Best and worst. And the weekend coming up, we'll take a look at your best player, worst player, what we thought was the best win on the board, and the worst loss on the board as well. It's coming up at about 6:48 this morning. Eric Smith, of course, of our lead NBA analyst. You'll know him from the Raptors broadcasts. And is there a, have you looked forward more to an NBA season than, and you've been doing this for 15 years, than what we're about to see this year to the Raptors' follow-up season from their division championship?
It would be a very close second, and I'll tell you, selfishly, it might even be number one, now that I think about it more. You know, you go back to the Vince Carter, you know, shot that rimmed out against Philadelphia in Game 7 and a chance for the Raptors to move on to the conference finals.
You're closer to the team now than you were back
then. That's the X factor, because I was doing pre-half and post at the time, and as much as I enjoyed doing that job, clearly, you know, having a chance now to work on the broadcasts and having done it now for 9 seasons, to know that going in and you're that much more a part of it, not just doing pre and post. So, yeah, you know what, the anticipation this year, because I tell you, I look at the Eastern Conference right now, and I'm honestly not saying this with any Raptor rose-colored glasses on. I'm not saying they'll win the East. They are definitely the best team in their division still. They're better than New York. They're better than Brooklyn. But I look at the Eastern Conference right now, Andrew, and I'm simply saying make the case. You could make a case for any number of the 4 or 5 teams I'm about to mention. But making the case for the Raptors, Derrick Rose coming back after 2 straight years of going down with an injury, where is he going to be at physically? Where will that put the Bulls? Will he stay healthy? There are a lot of question marks around the Bulls. The Indiana Pacers lost Lance Stephenson, a major part of their team. Major part of their team. Miami loses LeBron James, takes a step back. Now, Cleveland takes a step forward with LeBron, but to me, they're not the instant contenders, favorites for the championship in the East, just because LeBron's there with a very young core around him. You look at the way that the East has stacked up now, you can put the Raptors, much like the Washington Wizards, in the mix of, hey, any number of 4 or 5 teams could be the number one seed in the East. I think Toronto's right in that mix.
I agree with you that there, if you're going to make a case, there's no, say, Miami of last year, mm-hmm. where no matter what you do, you're never finishing ahead of Miami, right? You just weren't going to do it. And we knew from day one last season, there's going to be Indiana, Miami, take your pick. One's going to finish first, one's going to finish second. They're eventually going to make the Eastern Conference final. So we don't have that team yet. But what if Kevin Love does go to Cleveland? Does that make Cleveland this team?
It could. I think they still have a big, and people are going to call me crazy for this, I think they have a big question mark in some senses at the point, as good as Kyrie Irving is coming off an all-star season. He's 2 years into the league, less than 15 games removed from a 1-year college career where he played less than 15 games. I think it's going to be imperative on him to make sure that he gets it right, not only as the quarterback on the floor for that team, but as the Robin to LeBron's Batman. Now, Kevin Love would absolutely help, an all-world talent, and if he's truly committed to signing a long-term extension with Cleveland, that's a big deal. But I still think, and LeBron proved this, Andrew, in his first tenure with the Cavs, it can't just be LeBron and a couple of guys with this bench that's sort of a mishmash. You need to have a solid, deep team. Maybe they start building that by signing a guy like Mike Miller, by having some depth pieces, by having a young Tristan Thompson if he's not, you know, part of some sort of trade. So I think the pieces are there. And yes, I think if you acquire Love and you've got LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love together, yeah, I would say they're probably on paper the favorites. But you got to go out and play the games. As cliche as that is, look at what Miami did in their first year. They made it to the championship, but they didn't win it, even with that three-star talent that they had.
I am still intrigued by Chicago and a little concerned about them, too, in the sense of, yeah, okay, Derrick Rose is coming back, and they didn't have Derrick Rose last year. They now have Pau Gasol, pretty good player. He replaces Carlos Boozer. But it's not like this team went through those injuries last year and won 30 games. Mm-hmm. They won 48 games. It's a lot of wins, right? That's a lot of wins to be adding Derrick Rose to the mix.
Yeah, with a hell of a coach. You know, when you look at what Tom Thibodeau does with that team and how well they played defensively, how committed they are to the game plan, they are a very regimented team. I think that they respect everything that their coach says and does, and they go out and they play a certain style and they beat you down with it on a nightly basis. And yeah, you're right. You add Derrick Rose to that mix, it makes them that much more dangerous. But where is he at right now? Where is he at health-wise? I hope, just as a fan of the game, that he comes back and can dominate like he did just a few years ago as an MVP. but I got to see it first. I got to see him stay healthy for half a season to see the impact that he can have on that team. And there's also going to be, I think, a feeling out process or period for some of these teams like Chicago, and even for a team like Cleveland and Miami, where you've got so many new pieces. How long is it going to take to get those guys on the same page? Whereas a team like Toronto that has the core back, that has the chemistry back, it's going to be, to me, imperative on them to get out of the gate well, because there should be no reason. There's no new face that you're trying to integrate really into the lineup. You've essentially got your same team back.
So if Cleveland does add Kevin Love, mm-hmm. and maybe it happens midseason, maybe it happens this week, there's no doubt about it. They are a better team today, no matter what they give up, because they have a lot of young, unproven talent, all that. But it's kind of weird because there's two reports in the weekend. Number one is that the current offer, or the latest offer to Minnesota, is Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett, and a first-round pick. That's pretty steep. If that's true, I don't know why Minnesota doesn't do it. Now, the other report is that Andrew Wiggins was never offered. So it's really tough to judge what's true and what isn't. But is Wiggins, Bennett, and first too much in your mind to add Kevin Love, even if it makes you contender right now?
You know what? I think you almost, in a sense, owe it to LeBron to make your run for it right now.
What, do you do it if you're Minnesota, though?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. 100% you do it. Kevin Love is leaving Minnesota. So get what you can for him now. I mean, if you've got an opportunity, even if it was just Andrew Wiggins, one player straight up, let alone you're talking about throwing Anthony Bennett and potentially another more pick, because he is walking away from Minnesota. You are going to get essentially nothing for him when he leaves via free agency. If he's still wearing a Minnesota Timberwolves this year, at the end of the season, he's gone and you're going to get nothing for him. So you take what you can get right now. I think, is that price too high? Well, if that price ultimately makes you a championship contender in the Eastern Conference and you can surround LeBron James with arguably the best power forward in basketball right now, I think you maybe owe it to him and to your fans to go out and do that. Because you know what? Andrew Wiggins might turn out to be a multi-time all-star, but you've got LeBron James, you got Kyrie Irving, you've got Kevin Love. You're going to be okay without him. And that's not a knock on Andrew Wiggins. That's just more praise for the type of player that Kevin Love is and what he could do for that team.
6:49, he's Eric Smith. I'm Andrew Walker. Let's take a look at best and worst.
Best. Lennox Lewis.
And worst.
Colby Lewis.
With Brady and Walker.
It is best and worst, what we like, what we didn't like from the weekend. We'll take a look at best win that we saw, worst loss that was on the board, a best player and worst player. We'll start with you, Eric. Worst loss.
All right, the worst.
What do you see from
the
weekend?
The worst loss, it came in a loss, but it also was a sore loser. And that is Colby Lewis.
Oh, my God.
Of the Texas Rangers.
What a display.
Well,
what a display.
To me, there is no game like baseball. I mean, football, hockey, basketball, do you insert your sport here? No other game has these unwritten rules and these code of ethics and morals that the way the game should be played like baseball. All these foolishness. So Colby Lewis gets mad at Colby Rasmus.
Yeah, this is Saturday.
On Saturday, for laying down a bunt with two outs, I believe in the fifth inning when the Jays were up 2-0 in that game, and Rasmus ends up laying down a bunt because the Rangers had the shift on, so Rasmus had half the field. He drops a bunt down, and then Lewis later says, "You're showing me up, and you're up 2-0. It's 2-0. It's the 2-0. Fifth inning. What are you talking about?
Oh, you know what? I thought it was very... It was very indicative of, all right, this is a team that had lost 22 of 25 heading into this series. They're sour. They're miserable. Things are not going their way. They're certainly not going Colby Lewis's way. And Rasmus beats the shift by laying down a bunt, which in a 2-0 game in the fifth, yeah, get on base. Do whatever you have to do to get on base. I thought it was frustration from Colby Lewis's part, but you're right. He looked ridiculous.
Talk about
unwritten rules. This isn't an unwritten rule. This is an unwritten rule that Colby Lewis decided to make up. That was your worst loss. Best win from the weekend. I'm going to give it not to Rory McIlroy. It's a pretty good win. But Rory McIlroy's dad. Maybe you heard about this. So
yes.
it kind of reeked a little bit of overzealous hockey dad in a sense. But the BBC reporting over the weekend that McIlroy's father, Jerry, remember him from his infamous U.S. Open Father's Day win. He was there. And three of Jerry's friends, Jerry McIlroy, placed a bet way back when, in 2004, on McIlroy winning the British Open before he turned 26. He was 15 at the time of the wager, and he's now 25. This is his last crack to make it work. a combined bet of 400 pounds, which is about $680. The odds at the time were 500 to 1. So they took home about 340 grand. Not as much as McIlroy won for winning the British Open, but it's a pretty good financial day for Mr. McIlroy as well. That was your best win from the weekend. I got worst player, best player. What did
best
you say?
Best player, I'm going to go with Melky Cabrera. Not only for what he did yesterday specifically with the homer and then driving in the two ribbies as well to ultimately seal the deal for the Jays, but he has been pretty much Mr. Consistency over the course of the season. And even during the losing streak, the 2-8, the terrible 10 games before the break, he was the one guy that was still swinging a hot stick and doing something for this Jays offense. So I'm giving it to Melky Cabrera.
All right, worst player, I'm going to Adam Jones of the Baltimore Orioles. So the Orioles finally lose a series. They drop 2-3 to Oakland. 10-2 yesterday, they take it on the chin. Now, Jones goes 0-4 with the K, and that'll happen. But he pulls the old, I don't remember how many outs there were in center field. Catches the ball, runs in, hang on, there's only two out. Meanwhile, the A's are running the bases like it's a freaking merry-go-round on a sack fly. And a brain cramp cost the Orioles an extra run and a 10-2 loss. Pretty good to see Orioles lead the Blue Jays now by 3 games in the American League East. 6:54. It is Brady and Walker coming up at 7:02. The Blue Jays, they needed to have it, and they did. They take 2 of 3 from the Texas Rangers. Rangers are lousy. Is that really a good measuring stick? Or is that what the Boston Red Sox are this week? We'll discuss it next.